The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Welcome to the Banned Book Breakdown, a podcast that delves into the world of censored literature, where we will review and draw attention to the stories of authors who the government has tried to silence. I'm your host, DJ Blue, and remember, literature unites us, censorship divides us. Let's review banned books. In today's episode, I'll be interviewing a librarian here at Dominican University of California. Her name is Angie, and she has been a librarian, both public and academic, for over 10 years. She currently works as the Student Success and Outreach Librarian and is one of the library liaisons to the School of Health and Natural Sciences. So, my first question is just in regards to your perspective and your experience with book banning and just your general opinion on it.
Yeah, so as a librarian, I feel that book bans are antithetical not only to my professional perspective and to the American Library Association's perspective, but also to me as a reader. I don't think that other people should be choosing what is available for folks to read. I work in an academic library setting now, but I've also worked at the public library. And the collection development policy that a library sets should be based on what the community wishes to read. That's not to say that you exclude things that people are not interested in, but you should be collecting what folks want to see. And I might not agree with all the books that my community wants to read, right? We have different political opinions, we have different religious beliefs, but just because I might not believe something doesn't mean that that book shouldn't be in the library. It's not up to me to make reading choices for others, and I don't think it's up to others to make reading choices for me.
And then to build on that a little bit, like something that I talk about kind of a lot on my podcast is the idea that like through literature you get to see different worlds and you get to see life through different perspectives, even if it's fiction. Like a lot of the books that I enjoy reading tend to be like realistic fiction. And so I think through a lot of that, you're able to see different perspectives. And just, I talk about a lot the importance of looking through different lenses because my experience is not the same as somebody else's experience. And oftentimes I also feel like it builds empathy in a way where like you might not see that in your day-to-day life, but by reading about it, you're able to see these different perspectives. So I just kind of wanted to see your point of view on that.
Yeah, and actually, it's not just your perspective. It is, studies have shown that reading fiction increases students and children's ability to empathize with people that are different from them. Because if you can empathize with an orc or an elf, it's very easy to empathize with a human being with a different life experience. So I do think that that's incredibly important. And books give you a chance to see the possibility in the world, right? Recently, I had a button making program for book banning specifically, and we were talking about different books and what's there. And one of the top two most banned books the past 3 years has been one of our alumni's books, Genderqueer. Okay. The author's name is Maya Kobabe, and A has a book, it's just a memoir about air life and their own journey with gender. And as when I was talking about this book, someone was like, oh, that sounds really interesting, let me check it out and read it. And I saw them again maybe a week or two later, and they were like, that was amazing. It explained so many things to me that I hadn't thought about before. The perspectives cleared up some stuff. Like, it made things simpler and more easy to digest. And just from that one interaction, you can see how reading a book that maybe is outside of your experience can change your perspective on something and give you a broader sense of the world.
And then, actually, I didn't know that they wrote that novel because I've seen it so much. So that's super interesting. But I think to kind of build off of that, I know like a lot of times the argument is, oh, that's not appropriate, or oh, my kids shouldn't be reading about that. So I just wanted to see what you think about that.
Yeah. And if you are concerned about what your child's reading, you should be involved in their reading. You should take the time to sit with them. I was very lucky to have parents that until I could read for myself, read to us every night. And then as I got older and my younger siblings, they would continue to read to them, and I'd like read my own book in the same room. And I think it's really important to have parents be aware of what's going on in their children's lives, but that doesn't end
and begin at books. You should know what's happening at their school. You should know what's happening on their social media. You shouldn't just decide, okay, here's a tangible problem. This is what I want to focus on. And contrary to popular belief, parents are not typically the ones that are inciting book banning attempts. Only about 16% of attempts are by parents in the local area. Mostly it's organizations and officials. So I think that that's an interesting misconception that often goes overlooked.
Can you share a little bit more about the officials and organizations and just kind of the motive behind that and what you think about that?
Yeah, I think that there are some politically motivated organizations that have taken on book banning and censorship as a way to provide a sense of protection and control over a vastly and quickly changing world, right? Demographics are shifting, people are moving on, people are growing and changing, and that is very frightening to some groups of people. And so a way that they choose to try and limit that is by limiting people's access to ideas that may quote-unquote influence them. But yeah, there was, I think maybe 2 years ago, the majority, like 85%, I think, of book banning attempts, and don't quote me on that, were made by 11 individuals, most of them members of Moms for Liberty. Okay. So, yeah, it's very clear who is pushing these ideals and why they're doing so, I think.
And then just for those that are listening, can you go into a little bit more depth about who Moms of Liberty are?
Yeah, Moms for Liberty is a conservative political group who believe in parents' rights, and that's what they are utilizing as a way to, what's the word I'm looking for, sort of explain why books should be banned. So they believe in a very Christian-centric worldview, and if the books available in the library do not reflect that. And I want to be clear, like, that doesn't mean like all Christians believe this way. This is a very specific type of like white nationalist Christianity, which has grown in popularity over the last, you know, we'll say 8 to 10 years. But what they're doing is they're using this parents' rights idea to then promote book banning so they can prevent books largely about LGBTQ plus people or people of color from being available to your children.
And then another thing that I've kind of talked about a lot is like this censorship of marginalized groups, obviously like LGBTQ plus, and then people of color and even like female authors. And I think a big thing that I've kind of seen as well is this idea that people writing from those perspectives are not being realistic. And that's something that's kind of frustrated me quite a bit, because who are you to tell other people that the perspective of someone else is not realistic? Like, just because it's not a life you've lived doesn't mean it's not the life somebody else has lived. And so I wanted to see if you've had any experience with that or just what you think about that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that people would feel like, oh, it's not a realistic portrayal of the world. If I'm reading fiction, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there was a lot of talk about this when the new when the Hobbit movies came out. Mm-hmm. So you had the Lord of the Rings story and you have the Hobbit trilogy, or Hobbit individual book, but the trilogy movie. And the Lord of the Rings, written by an Anglo-Saxon man in, you know, the 1910s, 20s, and 30s. And J.R.R. Tolkien went through a bunch of different stuff, but everyone felt that all of the characters in that are white. And when you watch the Lord of the Rings original trilogy from the 2001, 2, and 3, almost every character is white. Then when they made the Hobbit series, I think they came out in like the late 2010s or early 2020s, they had like Black hobbits and, you know, Latino men and like people of different colors. And people said that wasn't realistic. There are dragons in that series. You know, like, I don't know that like realism about like this
what you perceive to be an Anglo-Saxon world is even something that matters in terms of like preserving the story when they cut out whole characters, you know, justice for Tom Bombadil.
And then something kind of a little bit, I don't want to say on the contrary, but then from, I guess, a different perspective is when it is realistic and it, there are these realistic portrayals of marginalized groups where people who don't always get to see representation of themselves oftentimes get to see that through literature. And I just wanted to see your opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so important to celebrate all of our differences because that's what makes us human. Humanity is not a singularity. Humanity is a multitude. And I think that if we can't share that with each other, then we aren't actually sharing our humanity at all. We're living in these little silos. And some people have a really hard time with that. When I worked at the public library, we had a patron come in who was irate that we had a book about Kamala Harris in a children's book display for Black History Month. And whether or not you agree with her politically, her achievement of that political office was historic. Period. And I think that that is a difficulty that some people have. They think that you're pushing an agenda when really you're just allowing people to exist.
Yeah.
Allowing people to live their lives is not an agenda. Mm-hmm. It's just life.
I think the other thing too to understand about that is like the great thing about a book is like you don't have to read it. Like you're like, you can pick it up and put it back down if you don't like it. And so I think that's like the crazy thing to me about book bannings is it's like, you don't have to read it. But beyond that, I also wanted to see your, obviously you've seen different perspectives and different experiences with book banning as a librarian. And I wanted to see how you feel these book bannings affect young adults.
Yeah, I can't imagine having my school pull books off of a shelf if they were about experiences that I identified with.
Right.
That immediately makes someone feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. It makes them feel like they're not a part of that community. It can be really dangerous to signal to young people that they don't belong because these books can't even be on the shelf for you to even see. Maybe you don't even like to read, you know? It's just knowing that, oh, that story is there. But as you take those away, you're not taking away the reality of people that have those experiences, but you are taking away their ability to feel like they belong in that space, if that makes sense.
That's also something I've talked about a lot in one of my favorite authors who I reviewed, Ellen Hopkins. She wrote a book based on her daughter's experience with addiction. And a lot of people were very upset about that book and just saying that it's promoting this and it's promoting that and it's like glorifying this and that. But that's somebody's real life experience. And so like, that's one of the things that I had talked about is it's so important for people to see, you know, oh, okay, like it's okay that I struggle with this. Like there's other ways to go about it or like I shouldn't be ashamed to get help for this kind of thing. And so I think that's so important. And I love that you brought that up. A little bit more elaboration on the parents and like trying to ban books instead of monitoring what you want your kid reading.
Yeah, I think that it is a way for some parents in some communities to try and find safety. I think that those parents are trying to protect and preserve an imaginary world where these people don't exist, these problems don't exist. And I can empathize with parents being scared of their children being different. You don't want your child to be bullied. You don't want your child to go through hardships. But ultimately, it is not up to you to decide how that child identifies and moves through the world. All you can do is be there to support them. And providing them access to stories and materials that showcase those views is one easy and amazing way for you to do that. And I think that if you are scared of what could happen to your child, then you should be more involved with
with your child. The more involved you are, the less you need to be scared because you'll know what's happening with them. You'll have a good relationship. You'll know who their friends are. You'll know what they're up to. And if they have a question, they won't be scared to ask you. They won't just go to TikTok or to Google or to ChatGPT. They'll ask you or look at a book and you can do it together. I think that's one of the amazing things about books is they can facilitate conversations about topics that are really hard. But they don't have to be scary anymore. You know, Tango Makes Three, a delightful book about gay penguins. And from there, you can talk about different types of families. And what does that look like? And what does it mean? Yeah. It doesn't have to be hard. And it's not a threat to you. Mm-hmm. Other people's ways of life are not a threat to your way of life. Again, humanity is not a singularity. It's a multitude. You know, we're all getting through it the best we can. And I don't think that it's up to any of us to decide how other folks should be living their lives if they're not hurting anybody, right?
I think that's the funny thing too, is like the protecting your kid and like, oh, banning books, but it's the same parents that give their kids unlimited access to the internet. And you know, this argument about like, oh, it portrays violence, like I know that was a big one for The Hate U Give, is oh, it portrays violence. The video games your kids are playing portrays violence all the same. So I think that's definitely frustrating. But just if there's any other closing statements or data information that you want to give.
Yeah. And also what you just said reminds me of the iconic movie Clueless, where she says, until the world is mature enough to not have violence in the news, then they shouldn't take it away from TV shows and movies that need it for entertainment value. So shout out to Cher from Clueless. But yeah, I just wanted to talk, like, we talk a lot about censorship and banned books and what does that mean? And the American Library Association tracks censorship attempts. And in 2015, there were 229 censorship attempts of 193 unique titles. Last year in 2024, there were 821 attempts for 2,452 titles. It has grown exponentially. And the real explosion of these bans started in 2021. Which coincides with a lot of different things politically that we won't get into here. But I think it's very interesting to look at that drastic increase in book bans, when it happened and who was involved in that. But yeah, at the end of the day, you should be able to read whatever you want to read. It doesn't matter if like it's a graphic novel or a comic book or, you know, a huge tome of fantasy or a history of the world. All books are good books to somebody, and we all should get to choose what we want to read for ourselves.
I love that. All books are good books to somebody. I love that. Well, that's it. Thank you so much I really enjoyed chatting with you. So thank you.
Thank you.